This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Petre Alanko, who is on his way from Helsinki to Tampere. And I'm really looking forward to talking with you about your soundtrack for Control. It's just such a mind-bending game, and your music is just such a perfect fit. So thanks so much for taking some time out of your drive to talk about it.
No problem. This is a pleasure.
Well, the studio that created Control, Remedy Entertainment, this is the third game you've done for them, right? You did Alan Wake and Quantum Break and now Control. So what was their pitch to you about Control? Because it's just such a fascinating game.
Well, the original pitch came from, I guess it was Sam Lake who asked me whether I was interested in maybe scoring something. And he promised me to invite me to some kind of get-together where they present the whole idea for the whole company of Remedy Entertainment. And when the time came, I just sat there in the audience and listened. My eyes were wide like tea plates or something like that. I don't know what exactly happened, but those two guys, Sam Lake and Mikael Kasurinen, it was amazing presentation, considering it was such an early stage of development, but it was very clear from the first point onwards that they had honed the idea and the world and events, environments, the characters quite thoroughly before they even mentioned anything to anybody. And that was when the lightning struck, so to speak, and I really got carried away with the idea of, hey, maybe I really do need to score this one. And luckily they gave me 50% of the responsibility.
The story is just, it's so fascinating. And it's one of those things that, you know, could be real, because we don't know. The playable character, Jesse Pope, talks to a being in her head, and she shows up at this fictional Federal Bureau of Control, which is in New York, but only certain people can see it. And her brother has been missing for a long, long time. And there are all of these weird events going on. She becomes the director of the bureau that gives her all kinds of amazing powers. And so on the surface, it would seem like it gave you a lot of opportunities to kind of create the sound world to go along with this.
Yes, definitely. Because I'm always interested in what happens to people, what happens to characters, what happens to your protagonist. I'm not really that interested in, okay, here's a god that kills everybody, the end type of stories. I rather like the idea of somebody like rather normal turn into something else and into something else. And eventually, as in Jess's case, she finds her inner superhero, or when she eventually realizes and gives in to the idea that she no longer is a mere human and instead is something way beyond normal human. That was the turning point and the gratification point, so to speak, in the end. but it was so interesting to try scoring. I mean, she wasn't flaky, or she wasn't like standing on a hollow ground, nothing like that, but there was definitely some kind of self-searching happening in the beginning, and she was really worried about her brother and what had happened to him. And you know, all the insecurities, those are like the best writing ground ever. And but turning that flaky, insecure person into something else, that's like, you know, that's $1 million point for somebody like me.
I'll bet. Well, speaking of turning ordinary things into extraordinary things, I was really intrigued to read how, when you were just kind of creating a sound library for the score, you said yep. you recorded all kinds of things, including your espresso machine and yep. the drum of your washing machine. So how, I mean, have you done this before? How did it occur to you to do that?
I do happen to have a rather nice espresso machine, I would say, an Italian brand. And it's, you know, made of iron and copper, and it's like really sturdy and meant for a restaurant, really. And whenever it's functioning or pumping water through the Gruppo into the nozzle, and you make the espresso, it makes a certain kind of a buzzing sound, which is the cover of the machine resonating with the pump. And it had a clear note in the beginning, and that sort of caught my ear. and I decided to record that with a special built microphone. I mean, the type of a microphone that records way beyond my hearing range or anybody else's hearing range. Well, except dolphins, maybe. And when you record something with such a high sample rate, I mean, I recorded it with 192 kilohertz, it records stuff that's beyond your hearing range. But when you slow it down, you also make the higher frequencies come down towards your hearing range. And when it was enough transposed down, all those so-called dolphin frequencies, they started to appear, and it made a buzzing, really unnerving, angry sound. Since it was pitched down, it sounded very dangerous, really. And I used that here and there whenever I wanted to, you know, raise an ominous feeling or bring in some extra darkness.
Thank you.
And the washing machine, well, that's another story. Because yeah, it appears in some of the rhythm tracks whenever it enters, correct word for the high revving thing that sort of pushes the water out of the fabric inside the washing machine. The motor reproduces a very distinctive pitch, almost like a yelling or whining. And it sort of reminded me of a guitar feedback, actually.
Wow.
Instead, it was an acoustic kind of a guitar feedbacking, and that's here and there also. And with some careful processing, I was able to make it even human voice-like. So there is a very hectic choir sample somewhere in the soundtrack, but as well there is this washing machine sort of crying, and it sounds like guitar feedbacking. I just happen to have a soft spot for strange sources for sounds, and well, that's one of them. And not to mention plywood and burning a piano and things like that. It's a, you know, wherever you can get a sound, I probably want to go to that direction and mangle it to beyond recognition.
Wow. Well, so do you, I don't know, travel around with a portable microphone so that when you're like out in the world?
I do. Yeah.
Wow.
I do.
That's fascinating.
I actually have quite a serious set in my trunk 24/7. You never know what you ran into. So I need to be prepared, and because I'm involved in quite a few productions at the same time, I need to be really sure that I'm able to record or store something that's valuable or even one of a kind.
Yeah. Well, what fascinates me about the setting for this game, The Oldest House, is that it's on the inside. In a lot of places, it looks like a typical office building, and yet it has all these different areas. And then when Jesse interacts with some of the characters or finishes up a mission, she gets to the astral plane, which is disorienting and really horrifying. And so the setting itself is kind of like a character. So how did that influence your music?
That's a funny thing. I usually think environments and buildings as characters myself, so that I can really sort of cling on to your idea. It was interesting because the first thing was that it's basically an open space within a closed space, and that brings in a few variables. It needs to be constantly changing. It needs to be constantly standing on its toes to be ready to, you know, either run or attack or something like that. Because everything is constantly under restructuring and constantly changing. The variation is something that I was after. And also because everything is, the brutalism in architecture, it sort of echoes the pure naked walls. They echo every sound. So basically, each empty space has its own original tone or original ambience that sort of needed to be applied into the sound as well. Not just by recording the rudest possible tones or strangest possible tones, but also as a, you know, adding space to a sound gives you breathing space. If it's too close or if it's too far away, you sort of lose the connection to the sound because either it's at your face or it's like hundreds of meters away. It's a very delicate balance between the space and the dry sound that needs to be applied whenever you want to evoke the emotion.
What's so cool about the way that you've done that is this, the music itself is so ambient that it seems like it just sort of grows out of the sound design too, and it's really seamless. So how closely did you work? Yeah, it's amazing. How closely did you work with the audio director?
Ville Sorsa, the audio lead guy, he was basically quite laid back and didn't give any exact rules or anything like that. Instead, he was. We had an occasional so-called coffee talk, and we exchanged ideas, and he probably relied on my output in a way that probably nobody else has ever relied before. And Ville has also a musician background, so we talk the same language that way too. We exchanged some ideas and discussed about how the building, how the characters, how the events of the game should be put into sound and into music. And we had a few rather long, let's say, founding meetings in the beginning, and after that it was only like occasional feedback and sustaining of the original ideas, and not many things had to be redone actually. And I tend to overthink sometimes. I have to admit that finally. But I have need to over decorate a scene, and it takes some time to realize that maybe we could use some less layers.
Well, that actually, I'd like to talk with you about that, because this soundtrack is really unusual. There are really no melodies, and it's just this, it's a wash of really fascinating sound. So how did you start putting the cues together?
I had a few very early cinematics for which I think they were some kind of not even cinematics, but they were more like flavor videos for the presentation that they gave for some outsider publisher or something like that. And I made a few tracks for those, and then dissected those tracks into samples that were then used here and there and given to the other composer as well. But mostly the whole thing was more or less like trying to establish the idea of, this is a good example. There is a leitmotif or lead melody that has six notes and it sort of descends down. And I loved the idea that Jesse was entering the building without actually knowing what awaits her. So it was more like coming down to business or concentrating or descending down or trying to reach, trying to touch. And since the leitmotif or lead melody isn't actually it's not either in major or minor key, it's something in between. But it ends with a major third that for most people feels like it's it's a major chord. And I wanted to emphasize the feeling that maybe eventually everything is going to end well. Maybe something horrible is happening along the way when the notes come down, but eventually it will settle down to that major third that sort of embraces you and wishes you welcome, which actually happens in the end when Jesse finally admits herself that she had become the director.
Thank you.
But other than that, there are not actually melodies as such. Instead, it's more like, I would say it's more feelings instead of strict speaking. More like emotional communication instead of using words or writing notes or anything like that. And that somehow applied to me as an idea because, well, there is somebody that's talking to Jesse in her head and not exactly a human being or any being at all whatsoever. Instead, she just hears a voice. And, well, it's more like that. It's an emotional communication way. So, yeah, there is a very, very thorough concept behind all this.
That's fascinating because it's such an interesting clue for players because as you're wandering around these hallways, you don't have a lot of company. You have the voice that Jesse talks to, but not always. And she's on missions and she's by herself a lot of the time. So it's just reassuring to have some of this music, even though it's really unsettling, it's kind of reassuring to have it as company. So that was a really good,
yep. Yeah. In a building by herself in New York. Are you nuts? Are you crazy?
With all this paranormal stuff going on.
I wouldn't do that.
No, me either. The enemy that she's fighting, that she calls the Hiss, is so fascinating. And I love how you've incorporated kind of these mysterious voices that you can't really understand in the music. There's a cue in particular, Portam ad Inferno, the Gate to Hell, where you actually put in some of those voices. It's so cool.
We tried several ideas, but eventually, it's a matter of a series of good accidents, really, that happened. I think I left a few extra tracks open, and we suddenly realized, hey, what the hell? This sounds too good. What is this?
Mentioned that you were half of the music team and you worked with Martin Stig Anderson, and he's known for his soundtracks for Limbo and Inside.
Yes.
So what was that collaboration like?
It was interesting because we never actually collaborated. Instead, we shared some resources. As I mentioned, I made a few so-called flavor or mother tracks in the beginning, which I dissected into a sample set for, say, cinematic designers or whatnot. And then I know that Martin received the same library consisting of, I don't know, maybe 400, 500 samplers, can't really tell. And then he mangled some of those and did some of his own samples. And towards the end of the development cycle, when I got the project on my desk for cinematics and themes and things like that, it was actually very interesting to dig deep into his library, or actually some of the library he had made. So we were sort of using the puzzle pieces in our own way, but despite that, we sort of violated the puzzle, it all ended up being like a very coherent picture of the same events, of the same people, of the same happenings. It's interesting how two different composers can work that way. I would say I'm a so-called normal composer, whereas Martin is more like almost musique concrète type of guy, and he's very at home with really strange tones. So I think we somehow complemented each other and created a very delicate balance within the game. And he's a perfect gentleman, I have to say. He's like one of the strangest guys I've ever met, but in a very good way.
Well, it works really seamlessly. I mean, you can't tell, or I couldn't tell as I was going through the game, who composed what. So however you guys got to that result, I mean, it's really very effective.
Yeah, we drank the same coffee, I think.
Or vodka, maybe. But there's one cue that is so interesting because to me it seems like a real sort of out there track. It's the tango right at the very end. How does that fit in the game?
It was one of the coffee talks again, but this time with Sam Lake, and he sort of mentioned me about a character that is a fan of old tangos and is a janitor and washes the floors and the ceilings barefooted, and it sounded so odd. It sounded like so Finnish, actually, that somehow I just felt that that guy needs a theme. And before I could even say it aloud, I think it was Sam who said, I think we should compose a tango for him. And I know that Sam has written a lot of poetry and dialogue and stories and novels and things like that. But most of his so-called lyrics have been edited poems. But this time we decided that maybe we should, you know, first try a blueprint onto which you try to connect some words. And I tried to mimic the best way I could, that maybe da 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 da, and then the next line would be da 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 da, like this. And he sort of filled in the blanks and replaced all the das with correct words and syllables. And then one Saturday I received a text that was just brilliant. And sometimes when you get the text in front of you, there's either the phonetic way you pronounce the words or how the sentences flow. It's sort of, how would I say, it triggers melodies and harmonies in your head. And I started hearing the tango in my head right at the very point when I saw the lyrics. And I thought, okay, this is really strange. And I was sort of, I didn't feel how to relate to that. But then I went to, you know, do some physical exercise, and I thought that maybe it disappears in my head. But no, it didn't. And once again, when I picked up the lyric sheet, I heard the same melody, same chords, same harmonies, the whole song in my head. And 90 minutes later, I had played in the whole piano thing, the double bass thing, drum set, and even had sung a demo vocals for it, which is awful. I don't like my voice at all. And then another two or something hours later, I had the whole arrangement there. It was like a matter of a few hours that I was able to create the whole track, and then corrected a few wrong notes here and there, but that was all. And luckily, Sam and everybody, they loved the idea and loved the track. And then we decided that, okay, we need to have Mr. Martti Suosalo to sing that. And he arrived for a voiceover session, and I think we recorded three takes or something like that, and a few so-called punch-ins here and there. But what really amazed me was that the first take of that recording session was actually the one that I ended up using. It was just, you know, it was spot on. It was like any Finnish classic tango ever. And his way to leave that thing, his way of phrasing and syncopating, it was right on the spot. It was perfect. Nothing had to be changed. I think I didn't even tune one note in there. It was amazing. It was like magic happening. And I have been sitting in vocal sessions for quite a few times in my life, and I maybe have once or twice had the same experience, that it's one take only and that's it. We could have made it with just that one recording only, if he had been in a hurry or some electronic equipment had been malfunctioning or something like that. But it was, you know, all my neck hair was standing when I heard the finalized track. It was like a Finnish classic from 60s or 70s or something like that. It's, you know, it's my first tango ever, so that was my virginity gone, finally.
Järveks luulin merta kerran, runon lausui hän. Mysteerin sen syövereissä vietti elämän. Alla synkän valtameren varjois vaeltaa. Etsii tietä valoon, luokse armaan ainiaan. Yksin sankar yöhön syvemmälle matkaa pois. Se taakka hänen harteillaan kuin lupaus aina ois. Täs pelissä tää narri lyö. Maahan aina vaan hetki kuulus lepoo suodaan jo takas kutsutaan. Aika särkyy ikuisuuteen, laukaus kajahtaa. Ei onnellista loppua hän kohtaa milloinkaan. Niin monta kertaa kerrottu tää tarina jo on. Sankarilla tuhat kasvoa, polku lohduton. Yksin sankar yön syvemmälle matkaa pois. Se taakka hänen harteillaan kuin lupaus aina ois. Täs pelissä tän narri lyödään maahan aina vaan. Vaan hetki kuos lepo suodaan jo takas kutsutaan. Täs pelissä tän narri lyödään maahan aina vaan. Vaan hetki kuos lepo suodaan jo takas kutsutaan.
It's amazing. And I love, I mean, maybe there was some, I don't know, paranormal help with all of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I have to say that there was a lot of paranormal type of things during the production of Control. I mean, production of the soundtrack or music for some scenes. There was a lot of, you know, some things just happened very naturally and without even trying or without concentrating. It just sort of, it was flowing out of, you know, head or something. I don't know if that makes any sense to you, but it felt like as if somebody else had been doing it all the time. I don't know. It's creepy, actually.
It's, well, it sounds like, oh, there's that line in Amadeus where Salieri is just saying, it's like Mozart is just taking dictation and just getting everything down on paper. Is that kind of what it felt like?
Yeah. Automatic writing. Yes, I would say it, parts of the soundtrack were made like that. And yeah, it's really nice to witness that myself, because I'm not a, you know, I don't believe in bullshit and things like that. You know, I don't believe in ghosts or anything like that. I'm very, very feet on the ground type of a guy. But when something like this happens, it sort of reminds me of something that, something metaphysical that's, you know, maybe we all have that in our heads and we just need the right triggers. But I have to say that Control was one hell of a trigger for me. It was like a custom built project for me. And I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's just, it's such a fascinating sound. And I have to say, the sound library you put together is so amazing. I've got this old Volvo convertible, and listening to the soundtrack in the car, I'd hear these noises and think, wait a minute, is that my brakes? Or is that the music?
Yeah. Oh, there is actually, there's brake discs played in one track.
Oh, wow.
Screeching sound was made with a car of my friend that had a really bad brake discs, and it needed a thorough renovation. But I just told the guy that before you do anything, let me record your brakes. And he was like, what are you talking about? Are you nuts? No, I'm not nuts. I just need to have that sound. Okay, here we go. My friends, they are used to, you know, my behavior. So no news there, really.
Wow, Petri, it has been so much fun and so fascinating to talk with you about this. And I really appreciate you taking the time on your drive to chat about it. So thank you.
No problem. This has been a pleasure.